Thanks for joining us on a Tuesday morning edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. Let's get into it. We are talking the Nets' future, how their season trajectory has changed, and how their plans with their potential free agents Spencer Dinwiddie, D'Angelo Russell, and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson may have changed with them. On this podcast, you may hear a reference to future segments that are not on this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, and that's because this was recorded Sunday night. We went very long with it, and we decided to split it off into two podcasts. So yesterday, in case you missed it, we had podcasts recapping the Nets' heartbreaking loss to the Memphis Grizzlies, their backbreaking one to the Washington Wizards, and now you have this podcast. So we split up into 2 days. We didn't want you to spend too much time with us, or you may have lost your mind. With that, let's get into it. Locked On Nets right now.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York to cover your Brooklyn Nets, and then after a year and a half of excellent coverage to stab you in the back and go cross town to the New York Knicks. I'm excited to be a villain on this podcast, and I am joined by your hero, the man who will keep the torch lit, your podcast filters, your podcast feeds full, Josh Bass. Josh, how are you?
Woo! How great is this? Gavin's last week. We are going to be celebrating. I think I never thought this day would come, but finally I have the show all to myself. My brilliant plan has worked out.
You have been throwing a literal nonstop party since you found out. I announced it on the podcast on Tuesday. This is the first 5-minute stretch you have been sober since I announced that.
Yeah. And who's to say I'm sober right now? So
I just assumed. All right, let's get into it.
Next, like Derek Rose says, you don't assume.
Yeah, and on that train of thought, you probably shouldn't be sober for this entire segment. If it weren't a Monday morning, I would say I'd hope all of you listening aren't sober for this segment, because I think it's going to get a little bit dark. The Nets on a terrible trajectory over the last couple of games. I think now they've lost, what is it, Josh, 6-7 in a row? They are 2-8 since Caris LeVert got hurt.
Yep, it's been 6 losses in a row, and 2 of those have been absolutely gut-wrenching losses. Obviously, the one to the 76ers, and then also the loss to the Grizzlies. I mean, there are teams that don't have as bad of a loss as those two games in 5 years.
Yeah.
And who's actually, you know what? The 76ers loss wasn't horrible just because they were going up against a really good team. And it's not like the Nets made so many fatal flaws, because Spencer Dinwiddie did hit the shot to put them ahead with 15 or 20 seconds left. And then Jimmy Butler just beat them on an insane play.
Stupid shot.
But the Grizzlies one is, I mean, that's a loss that's going to say, hey, this is going to be a team that's going to be really pressed to win 30 games even.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that next segment, or at least I am. They were up by 7 with 33 seconds left in that game. 7 points with 33 seconds left. And they let Jaren Jackson score 7 in about 15 seconds of total game time. That is nuts. That is absolutely insane. But I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole. Just given the way this Nets season is going, given the fact that Caris LeVert's timeline is still very indefinite, best case scenario, it still kind of looks like, based on how they're playing, the Nets could be out of the playoff race, even if he comes back in early February, which might be a stretch. What do you think that does for the Nets' trajectory going forward, and how they treat the rest of this season, and in turn, their incoming free agents?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like at this point, they should try to go for that top 5 pick, because they're 8-16, and as much as Nets fans love to say, oh, our culture is incredible and our fucking practice facility so good, look at all these guys that are developing and they're doing such great things, but they're 8-16 and they have the same record as the Knicks, who we constantly trash over and over again. And we all thought, oh, Gavin's going to be making a downgrade to go from the Nets to the Knicks. Mm. No, it's just a level.
It's a lateral move.
Yeah, it's a lateral move.
People are really excited about it, too.
Yeah, and the Nets suck. We have to realize that at best case scenario, we would have been an 8 seed this year. And it's a lot of things have gone wrong. And D'Angelo Russell might not be the future. Jared Allen puts up nice box score popcorn stats and doesn't really have that much of an impact. We're terrible right now. You've lost six in a row. And really, there's no signs for hope moving forward. So even though Caris LeVert's a nice building block and Spencer Dinwiddie has developed into a really good role player, and there's a couple guys on the margins that Marks has done a good job drafting, overall, this team is still a mess. And they're not at the abyss they were a couple years ago, but it's still going to be a long road ahead. And I think anyone who's saying, oh, we could still get back on track with a bunch of home games coming up and maybe make a run at their 8 seed, they're delusional if they say that.
Yeah, I think the second Caris LeVert got hurt, and obviously everyone thought it was a lot worse than it was, but even when you heard that he was out for 2 months and we were ecstatic, and I think most mm-hmm. Nets fans were ecstatic when we found out it was just 2 months, I think that in some ways should have been the single that the Nets had to switch gears this season and not yeah. necessarily look at...
Well, you want to see how they do without LeVert.
Sure, but I'm just saying... Okay, no, I'm not... I guess I'm the team should not have. Fans intellectually probably should have, because this was not a team with sufficient talent sans their best player to make a playoff run. Even in an Eastern Conference that is just about as diluted as ever, with apologies to a top four that is very, very solid. It's just not going to happen this season. There's not enough talent there. And because of that, I'm not going to say it's a good thing. They lost to the Grizzlies and the Sixers in the fashion they did, because it was just gut-wrenching stuff, and I think emotionally for this team, they definitely needed to win one of those two games. But in terms of being realistic with yourself and deciding how you're going to approach the rest of the season, I don't think it was the worst thing in the world, because I think the best thing the Nets could possibly do for themselves, and this is something you and I said to a point going back to the preseason, is get the highest draft pick possible. And where the Nets are possibly going to finish, the new lottery rules are actually kind of favorable to them, because they kind of disincentivize teams from finishing with a bottom three record, but they up the odds of a team with a top eight worst record into getting into the top three or top five, or at least I believe that's how the new lottery works. So potentially this could end up really well for the Nets. They're frankly due for some lottery luck after not being allowed to participate the last four seasons, and maybe they start heading that direction.
I agree with you, because from a rational point of view, what's going to provide the most expected value for the Nets in the long term is to lose games. At the same time, and you know this very well, like when you watch a team like we do night in and night out and record a podcast every day, wink, wink, sorry, David Locke, and do it three or four times a week.
Yeah.
It's you want them to win games, because each loss is so heartbreaking. And to see them just struggle to execute on a night-to-night basis and really just not have the talent to compete with teams, it is good in the long run, but it's tough to watch. It's a slog, these 82-game stretch, when you don't really have those marquee young players. And Jared Allen's a nice piece. D'Angelo Russell is highly touted. He's not that good, but he's highly touted. But they still don't have the huge upside guys, like looking at Phoenix, who's also horrible, DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker. So, you know, maybe it's good for the Nets in the long run, but it's, you know, it's disappointing when you have those brutal losses, regardless of what the long-term outlook is.
And to me, that was, outside of obviously on an individual level, it's far more significant, but to me, that was the greatest tragedy of the LeVert injury, because the Nets were turning into just a very, very watchable NBA team. And they were, to some degree, most of last season. Even this season without LeVert, these games are fun. Like the Sixers game was fun. The 76ers game was fun. The Wizards game was not, but they still play some fun games. But with LeVert, I just think this could have been a very enjoyable product. But I don't want to waste any more time rubbing dirt in the wound. We're going to have this segment go a little bit longer than usual, because Josh, I do want to get your thoughts on the Nets' impending free agents, guys like D'Angelo Russell, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Spencer Dinwiddie. Does the way this Nets season is going, and I guess the way those guys are playing on an individual level, has your opinion changed on what the Nets should do with any of them as we, I don't know, I guess kind of move into potentially a different phase of the season, different phase? Guys, if you're like me and possess the unfortunate combination of having terrible circulation, having moved to Arizona for 4 years, and then having moved back to New York, by which point your resistance to the cold was relatively non-existent, may I recommend Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. Those are great, by the way, if you haven't tried those out. Really, really love them. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees and are powered by a rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion battery that lasts up to 12 hours on each charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're wearing them. Pretty useful. Perfect for any family member or friend on your holiday gift list. Great for anybody who works outdoors, skiers, snowboarders. Action Heat clothing provides toasty warmth and comfort for your whole body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts. Ooh, sounds excellent. And long johns. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat. Action Heat is available for both men and women, and they have great new styles and models just released for this 2018-19 winter season. Make winter activities more enjoyable with a blast of warmth. Action Heat is the perfect solution to keep you toasty and warm even in the most frigid winter weather, which we are about to get a lot of in New York, so be sure to check out Action Heat.
Yeah, I think that I still really want to re-sign Spencer Dinwiddie because the max he can get is 4 years, $47.5 million, and I think that's a bargain for him.
That's a great deal.
Worst case, he's going to be a really good sixth man, so I think as soon as it hits December 8th, as soon as what is that? That's Saturday. If the Nets don't lock him up, then I'm going to be pretty pissed because I think he's a product of someone that they took a chance on, has developed into a really good player, not a star by any means, not an all-star, not even a good starter, but he's a decent starter and a really good backup, and I think he's someone you want to have on the team. And guys like D'Angelo Russell are super volatile. My opinion going into the year is that I wouldn't want to lock him up long-term. Still don't want to. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson was a guy that I thought the Nets should try to keep at a reasonable price. And now looking at how he's done this year and just I've really soured on his fit on a modern NBA team. And I really just don't think the Nets would make sense bringing him back just because he doesn't really fit with what they're looking for. And, you know, his role, we say this a lot. I mean, he needs to be more of a slasher defender type and not the one-on-one scorer that he always tries to be. But what do you think?
I'm 100% with you on all three of those guys. I think Russell remains the most interesting one because I wasn't aware that was the max amount of money Dinwiddie can get. In that scenario, I think the Nets should absolutely throw that offer out, and he seems to be a guy who loves Brooklyn, and he loves the fact that the Nets took a chance on him. So I would be shocked if that doesn't get done. As far as Hollis Jefferson goes, I will say at least – until that Wizards game, I think he has been playing better. It doesn't really change my long-term opinion on him, and it's very much in line with what you just said. Russell is obviously the most curious case, and the guy who is just such a consistent enigma. And the thing is, he's consistently inconsistent. That's where I was going. It's so easy to fall into the trap. Every time he has a massive night, like when he had 38, 8, and 8 against the Sixers, it's so easy to say, That's a star. That's a guy that the Nets have to keep with all the capital they gave up with what turned out to be Brook Lopez and Kyle Kuzma for him, with the fact that it was really the Nets' only top five quote unquote level talent that they were able to get during that dark post Billy King trade era. But simultaneously, I don't see his flaws ever really getting fixed, and I don't want to go too far into it because we talk about it every single podcast, but he's the kind of guy that I would want to bring back if he doesn't really get a lot of looks around the league. But I would let him go into free agency. I'd say, let's see what kind of contract offer you can get. If some team just blows his market out of the water, I think the Nets should say, good riddance, best of luck, D'Lo, enjoy wherever you end up. And I think if he doesn't get that great offer, maybe the Nets bring him back on a bargain and you get to mess around a little bit more, just given the fact that they're not going to be that great in the next few years. But I think him being off this team down the road, I think it actually makes the Nets better because it means maybe 30 to 35 minutes a game for D'Lo and Caris LeVert, more time on the ball for each of them. And I think both are at this point just very obviously better players than D'Angelo Russell. And I think that makes the Nets better.
Yep. No, I see what you're saying. And I think that, you know, D'Lo for me is someone that even though he's worth, let's say, who knows, $12 million contract, I don't think the Nets would be able to bring him back for less than this price. But even if he said, hey, I'm down to take 4 years, $40 million, I still wouldn't do it just because I feel like the opportunity cost is a lot in this case, just because he sucks up so much of the time with the ball and other guys can't really develop. And at this point, the Nets don't have a lot of guys that need time with the ball in their hands besides LeVert, who's injured, and Dinwiddie, who has his fair share. But as they hopefully bring on more wing talent, whether that's in the draft or free agency, and guys that need the ball in their hands more to develop, I think D'Lo is going to be taking up that time and soaking up those possessions. And we already know what he is. I mean, he's someone who's been in the league four seasons. I tweeted this out earlier this weekend. His true shooting percentage by season, 50.7%, 51.8%, 50.9%, and year-to-date, 50.1%. So he just hasn't improved as a scorer at all. And if you're not a scorer, you can't really succeed in this league. So I just don't think that, even though he's talented enough to be brought back in a contract, I just think it makes sense to wipe their hands clean and say, hey, the Brook Lopez trade was a mistake just because we gave up the pick that ended up being Kyle Kuzma. We took a chance on D'Lo, who's a talented guy and had draft pedigree. It didn't work out. And let's move on and let's see what else we can get.
Great great econ term with opportunity cost. That is what I was thinking about. And I am in total agreement with you on it. I think going forward, it's going to be interesting to think about, with all their cap room, what free agents the Nets could potentially bring in. And I know I want to put in like a little bit of a qualifier on this whole conversation that, like, I'm sorry that 24, 25 games into the season, we are already talking about next summer and what the Nets are going to do. But again, if you just take a realistic look on where this franchise is, that kind of maybe should be the conversation. And I guess down the road, which really just means the rest of this week, I think maybe we should get into guys that could potentially be gone this year and whether or not it would be worth, if you have any thoughts on this now, we can talk about it a little bit, whether or not it'd be worth trying to trade Russell in season if you know you're not going to want to bring him back, and kind of what his market would be like.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think that I would try to trade him midseason. I just don't know who would want him and what they would give up. Maybe it could be even like a second round pick and a young player who's looking for another chance, and maybe someone who hasn't really gotten a lot of playing time on a stacked team. So looking at teams like Toronto or who knows, Boston, who have like those really good rosters. I mean, here's the thing. There's not a team that's really going to be willing to give up a lot that also wants him, because any like good team that might have those young spare part pieces willing to trade, D'Lo's just too big of a player to integrate midseason. And he's someone that doesn't really fit seamlessly because he wants the ball in his hands a lot. And he wants to really survey the scenery and chew the fat on the possession and waste 15 to 18 seconds on any given time down the floor. So who knows? I feel like he's always going to be a guy that's better suited for a bad team just because he can take a lot of shots, even though it's never efficient. He can get you through a 48-minute game, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I'm just like thinking out loud. Like, I wonder, like, if the Brandon Knight experiment, when he comes back, blows up for the Rockets, maybe they're the kind of team that could see him just giving like 5 to 10 minutes in a playoff game of instant offense off the bench. Maybe the same thing with the Nuggets if Isaiah Thomas doesn't come back, though. I don't know if they want to necessarily risk like messing with their chemistry that's been so good early this season. Even a team like Memphis could maybe use a little bit more pop off the bench, and they never really replaced Tyreek Evans last year. That's one I kind of like, and they at least have this length around him that they could theoretically make up for his deficiencies defensively. Again,
Milwaukee, they could use another scorer off the bench, and Brogdon's inconsistent, so is Bledsoe, and Dele isn't in the rotation anymore.
Right.
Do they really trust DiVincenzo? Maybe he could be someone that they'd take a chance on just because they do have so much length on defense that, again, like Memphis, they could cover for him, and he could provide maybe a spark plug in a couple games.
Do you think D'Lo would – like, what would his game look like in a bench role? Like, do you think there's a scenario where, like, on a better team, like, he could tone it down a little bit if he was playing next to, like, a super – like, let's just say, like, they trade him to Milwaukee. He's playing great. Bledsoe or Brogdon gets hurt, and they want to throw him in crunch time. Could he tone it down if he was playing with Giannis, or do you think – the qualities that he displays as a Net are just inherent to his game?
Yeah, I feel like that's just how he plays. I think if he got traded to Milwaukee, he'd be like, oh, great. We have me and Giannis. We've got Middleton and Valencia supporting us. I just think that's the point guard. He's always been the point guard. He was that McDonald's All-American, number two overall pick. You know, I don't ever see him being in a low usage role. I just don't think that's how he operates. And, you know, if his teammates don't pass him the ball, they don't pass him the ball. But when he gets the ball, I think he's going to be in that same type of just holding the ball, dribbling a lot, and then trying to make something happen in a very slow manner at the end of the shot clock.
Yeah, I wonder if Budenholzer or like another team you could potentially throw out there who could use some pop off the bench and maybe and definitely some more three-point shooting like the San Antonio Spurs. Like if he's with Budenholzer or Popovich, like obviously Atkinson, I guess, via Marks has like some of maybe the same coaching philosophies and runs some elements of the same offenses, but just two guys who I'm not sure how true this is for Budenholzer, but I think he's a little bit of this, like two guys who have like a little hard ass in them. Obviously that's more Popovich, and just two guys that command a lot of respect around the league and will yank you if you just hold the ball. Maybe not Pop, because that's kind of their offense now, but anyways, I don't know. I just think two coaches who have enough respect that could maybe force Russell to change elements of his game. I'm curious to see if that's possible, because at the end of the day, and like this is the refrain that I think so often annoys both of us, but I'll throw it out there anyways. He's still such a young guy that I think maybe with stars around him and with a coach that he is just here's the thing. Here's what it comes down to in my mind. Has the leverage to bench him if he doesn't play the way that he wants to, which the Nets don't, especially without Caris LeVert. I wonder if that would change him at all.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like the Spurs are always so successful just because they really don't take on guys like that.
Right, but they sometimes have one.
They do have ball stoppers in LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan, but those guys are really good and have that cachet.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we went 20 minutes, so I think we're actually gonna end up releasing this as its own podcast. Probably, you'll probably be hearing this Tuesday morning, so we have to redo our whole intro, but that's fine. Anyways, really appreciate you guys tuning into this one. One of the last times you'll hear me and Josh forever. The Nets are playing the Knicks on Sunday, and I offered to come back on the podcast and do a very quick reunion ep with Josh, but he quickly informed me that I am permanently banned from the podcast and all friendship-related activities. So that is exciting stuff for Josh, just terribly depressing for me, but we will both march on. Thank you for tuning into this edition of Locked on Nets. We'll be back later in the week.